Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Philip Glass is America's most famous living classical composer and for decades one of its most controversial. He brought new audiences to classical music and new music to the classical genre. Now he's collaborating with muse and companion acclaimed cellist Wendy Sutter. The lead in one prominent review this month reads, Philip Glass is in love. This hour, On Point composer Philip Glass and cellist Wendy Sutter on their collaboration and their new work, Songs and Poems for Solo Cello. You can join the conversation. Have you followed Philip Glass through the decades? Have you heard Wendy Sutter perform? Have you heard the music they're now making together? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Joining me now from New York is composer Philip Glass. He's written symphonies, operas. In April, the Metropolitan Opera staged his 1980 opera Satyagraha, scores for films, including collaborations with Errol Morris and Woody Allen, and has ventured into many cross-cultural compositions, including with Indian sitar player and composer Ravi Shankar. His new CD of cello music, written for Wendy Sutter, is Songs and Poems for Solo Cello, which the Wall Street Journal raves is a work that goes beyond passion, something powerful, exalted, and also very simple. Philip Glass, wonderful to have you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. Very pleased to be here.
Also from New York, internationally acclaimed cellist Wendy Sutter. She made her solo debut with the Seattle Symphony at age 16. In 1994, she premiered a dance cello duet with Mikhail Baryshnikov. She's performed with the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra and the Chamber Orchestra of Europe and with the new music icons, the Bang on a Can All-Stars. She's collaborated with many composers, including China's Tan Dun, on both his cello concerto premieres, The Map and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and cello soloist in Water Passion. The Wall Street Journal says of her performance on the new CD, Songs and Poems for Solo Cello, that she sounds intensely strong, intimate, committed, breathless. She returns his, Glass's, love. Wendy Sutter, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. Nice to be here.
And congratulations to both of you on the new CD. It's wonderful. And Philip Glass, I have to say, right up front, I've been a big fan for a very long time. It's an honor to have you with us and wonderful to have you both. Wendy, it's a terrific performance on this CD.
Thank you.
Philip, maybe first to you. You've composed a long time, almost compulsively, some would say, maybe you'd say yourself. I mean, you compose and compose and compose. You've got a huge output. People are talking now about your relationship with Wendy in relation to this composition. But I wonder if you've watched over the years, when and how do individual people sort of come into the mental process of your composition?
Well, actually, that's always been a particular stimuli for me, working with other people, whether it could be other composers like Ravi Shankar or it could be other string players or musicians, conductors especially. I find that having a relationship with the performer is often triggers a process between the performer and myself, which becomes very productive. So this is something that I've been doing for a very long time. My collaborators include all kinds of people. Actually, Wendy and I even share a few. Jerome Robbins was someone I collaborated with, and she collaborated with. He set the dance for Misha Brisnikov for work, and he also set ballets of music to mine. So, I think it's also important to remember that I am also working as a performer, so that I have a particular, aptitude for understanding how performers work and how music enters the world through a performer and through the interpretation of a performer. I am very far away from thinking that music exists in some abstract way as on a piece of paper somewhere. To me, music comes into being through the active and creative talents of performers. And I've found myself gravitated toward those kinds of people, whether they're dancers or they could be designers or they could be other composers and especially, of course, instrumentalists.
Wendy Sutter, what about for you? I mean, you've been performing for a long time now, since you were 16, and I'm sure you've gone through the whole, you know, classical bookshelf of scores, whether it's Bach or Beethoven, you name it. And of course, you've also worked with living composers where there's this kind of interaction. What's the difference for you when the composer lives and breathes and, you know, is part of informing your performance?
Well, I was just talking to a colleague, a violinist friend of mine last night about this. It's, I mean, if you like the composer, if it's music, what could be better, you know? I mean, you're getting the information's so direct. You can speak to the guy. You know, I can't
right.
call up Mr. Beethoven and
right.
ask him what he
hey,
really
Bach.
Meant by that right. subito dynamic or, you know. So there's a lot of not second guessing, but retelling. And, you know, we all like to claim that our teachers knew Mr. Beethoven or Mr. Bach, et cetera, et cetera. And so a lot of it's kind of history that's translated through lore, and we just hope and wish that it's, you know, somewhat correct. So that being said, if you're, you know, living at the same time with a composer who you admire and things you know, I can just ask him, do you really want that E-flat there? I mean, basic questions like that.
Does it give you more freedom or less in interpreting that the composer
well,
may be over your shoulder?
It absolutely depends on the composer. Philip is has a lot of freedom with Philip. And this Songs and Poems was truly a collaboration. A lot of the, there were some things he wanted to do, and I just said, no, I won't do that. I mean, he wanted some things to be repeated a few more times. Some of the double stops and the counterpoint I actually put in, and then he would say, take this home and think about it. And so I would take a movement home and I would think about it, and I would add some little kind of first species counterpoint, you know, and then show it to Philip, and he's like, oh, that's good, maybe we'll take some of it out. But so this was truly a collaboration. So with Philip, obviously there was a lot of freedom in that regard, and I don't consider myself a composer at all, you know, strictly an interpreter and performer, but this with this piece, I felt, you know, like a Bach suite. I mean, we take liberties with Bach's music because Bach wanted performers to do that, to do ornamentation and things, and I do take, certain amount of liberties with the suites and adding ornaments, and that's been a tradition that's passed on and okayed by all my former teachers and things. So I really saw Songs and Poems as kind of a, you know, similar structure, kind of Baroque structure, and I felt that it was open for that kind of ornamentation and some choices left up to the performer.
I think Philip was absolutely
in agreement about that.
Yeah, I want to think with you, too, about where this piece brings composition, brings the composer. Let's listen back for just a moment to a little bit from Einstein on the Beach, 1976. This made Philip Glass's name. You'll hear. Einstein on a Train, 1976. It was radical. It had people sort of running out of the symphony halls, but also flocking in. Now, let's flip quickly, if we may, to a little bit from solo Songs and Poems for Solo Cello. This is out just last fall, now out on CD. Let's listen a little bit to the latest Philip Glass. Thank you. Einstein on the Beach to Songs and Poems for Solo Cello. Philip Glass, it sounds like a heck of a long journey from one to the other. Is it just years, or are you in a completely different mood as you write this one?
Well, it is. It's a good 30. It's a good 30 years apart.
Yeah.
Good 35 years apart. And I think that's kind of normal. I think if you look at any body of work, anybody's body of work, with any 2 or 3 year period, there'll be a lot of similarities. But in order to get the sense of development of the work, you really have to look at it over 20 or 30 years. And one of the problems we have with contemporary music is that people are still alive and they're still writing, and the work isn't finished yet. And unfortunately, there's a lot of pressure on writers to come up with answers to questions that can't be answered for a long time. I don't think, for example, when I hear Songs and Poems and I hear Einstein, to me, I hear the same process, but I hear how the process has undergone a very dramatic change. But to me, it's the same composer. If you played those two pieces for someone else, they might think that two different people wrote them. And in a sense, that's true. We're not the people. You know, when I wrote Einstein, it was maybe 37, and I wrote the other piece, I was, you know, it's I was 70. So.
Yeah.
So obviously, there are going to be big changes, but
we'll talk about just that. Philip Glass, we have to take a little break here, and
sure.
I'm sorry to interrupt. We'll go out with song 3 from Songs and Poems. Philip Glass, Wendy Sutter, please stand by. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about music and the muse with composer Philip Glass and cellist Wendy Sutter, talking about their new collaboration, Songs and Poems for Solo Cello. Behind us right now, music in 12 parts. Philip Glass wrote this back between 71 and 1974. You can hear the sound that he became famous for, a kind of hypnotic, entrancing repetition, often called minimalism. He didn't love the name, but you can hear a bit of why right there. You can join our conversation this hour. They join us from New York. Are you a Glass fan, a Sutter fan? Have you followed his work and career since Einstein on the Beach and the heyday of minimalism? And what do you hear in her cello work on this latest piece? What about this new composition? Do you hear Philip Glass in love, the master chasing the muse? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. That was Philip Glass then, in his 20s, 30s. Let's listen to a bit from the brand new composition composed to be played by Wendy Sutter. Here's song 4 from Songs and Poems for Solo Cello. Songs and Poems for Solo Cello, composed by Philip Glass, performed there by Wendy Sutter. And forgive me, but that's song 4 we're listening to right there. Song 5, excuse
song
me.
Five,
I keep getting the number wrong. I apologize.
I'm sorry. It's okay.
Philip and Wendy join us from New York. And if we may, for a second here, we want to look at all aspects of this collaboration. But let's go straight at the one that Greg Sandow picked up on in his review in the Wall Street Journal Mr. Glass, he says, you're in love, and that's no small part of what we're hearing here. What about that part of the relationship that's in this music?
I think this is something that happens all the time in the arts. I don't know why it shouldn't be a big surprise to anybody.
We're not shocked, but we're interested.
We're always interested. Mm-hmm. We're interested in people. And the thing about music is it's a supremely social art form. It's things that people do together, whether it's... And there are deep collaborations that we can have with people. And you might even say they're love-like in a certain way, and yet there may not be any real relationship beyond the music. At the same time I was writing this music for Wendy, I was working on an opera that Dennis Davies was working on. In the way, she made tremendous contributions to the piece. And one of the things that I've prided myself in doing is finding talented people to work with benefiting from what they bring to the work. In the case of Appomattox, which is the opera I did with for Dennis, that was done in San Francisco.
On the end of the Civil War.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he had comments to make almost about every line that I set. Mm. Yeah, and by the time we got done, he had really brought so much to the work, and that's another very long friendship I remember when Morty Feldman was alive, and he was writing music. You remember the viola in my life? He wrote that piece. Mm. And we were all, it was very interesting to be, but not just that. During the time that I was a young man in New York, I was very close to John Cage and Merce Cunningham, and that was a relationship that was extremely productive. So I think that these things, and it happens with painters, it happens with writers, sure. It happens with poets. It's one of the great things about the arts is that it encompasses so many of our intellectual abilities, our physical abilities, our emotional areas. When things are working, when things are really cooking, amazing things can happen.
But let me ask you, if I may, Philip Glass, I mean, in a long life, you've composed for a long time now, and life has many parts. You compose more or less constantly,
least 12,
so
right?
you must have composed in all kinds of states.
Yes.
I mean, in grief, but this is a particular one. This is love, and I wonder how you think
coloring. Is that different from other kinds of collaboration? In that
but
way,
not though, different from a moment of a time of grief or a time of wandering or a time when one might
feel lost.
But I
think the thing I want to point out is that there are particular things that Wendy brings to her work. This is a woman, she's from the Curtis Institute. She comes from a tradition of string playing that's... She knows the classical repertoire, from the Baroque to the present. She's worked with all kinds of people. So what she brings to the work, apart from, you want to talk about, what I'm interested in talking about music. I mean, everybody knows about love, but music and when she plays a piece of mine, she's bringing everything she knows, whether it's Bach or Dvorak or Mahler, whatever. She brings a wealth of... music experience to the thing that that someone with less range and less ability would not even have access to it. Yeah. The story of the work is a story of a supremely talented interpreter and a composer who was willing and quite able to invite them into the process. And that's I remember years and years ago, I was tell you a funny story. I was talking with Allen Ginsberg, and some fellow had written a review, and they said, well, the thing about this guy Glass is that he himself isn't very talented, but he works with very talented people. And I said, Allen, what do you think of that? And Allen said, well, that sounds pretty good to me.
Why not? Why not?
And in fact, I do pride myself in having worked with extremely talented people. And there will be... there can be emotional shades of closeness that come into it too. That's part of it. That happens with every part of our lives. But to me, when Wendy talks about how she took pieces, and, you know, I could write things that didn't actually work for the cello. By the way, that's very common for composers. Mm. Very few of us are really good string players. Sibelius was a very good string player, but and look at the violin concerto. Mm. But very few composers have that, the depth of knowledge of the instrument, and we depend really on players to help us through some of the tricky aspects of the work, and that way Wendy was a superb collaborator, and it was fun to be with, and it was very personal at the same time, and all these things were good things.
Wendy Sutter, we hear that power of your interpretation here, and you've spoken to that collaboration that Philip is focused on there. But at the same time, we can't avoid the fascination with the fact that you are sort of the muse for this piece and not simply its interpreter. And, you know, that's an experience I think people kind of, some people sort of dream of, and we're grateful to you if you can tell us what it feels like to not only be an interpreter, but to be a muse. It's kind of an old-fashioned concept, but an endlessly beguiling
kind of
one.
Very, like, Victorian.
Yeah.
What's
it feel like
there
to be
in that position?
There
definitely is that. There's a lot of truth in that. And it was, you know, it was very tantalizing because I was getting music sent to me very quickly from his office or when I'd meet mm-hmm. with Philip. And, you know, we weren't in a situation then where we could be a couple. I mean, Philip was still married. And, mm-hmm. you know, so this was his way of, I think I was slower to become aware of it than Philip, but I would see the scores and especially that fifth movement and then even mm-hmm. Parts of the second movement. And I mean, I'll be very frank. I was, you know, moved to tears. I was seeing, I felt some of the most beautiful cello music in, you know, my 35 years of playing the music. So, I mean, I won't be intellectual about this. I was very moved. And, so the music was giving me the words, you know. And,
well, that's what I wonder. You're lucky to live as he lives, schooled and immersed in that world. We can't all do that, but we assume that musicians read music the way we read words. And so,
absolutely,
he was
absolutely
talking to you in this score.
Absolutely, no, absolutely. I mean, there's some melodies that we all, you know, listen, hear, and recognize and cry. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Music that's been around forever, especially the fifth movement. I saw that as kind of right up there with the Bach Chaconne for violin. And so I said, okay, here it is. We got the Chaconne now for the cello. You know,
very romantic, bold, passionate, exploring. Philip Glass, did you feel a bit naked as you shared that with Wendy Sutter? You were declaring something here.
I just wrote it. You know, the music came very quickly. It was very spontaneous, but music often is that way for me, but I didn't question it. I knew who I was writing it for. I knew how it would sound, and that fifth movement we talked about, I think we talked about it in the morning, and by the afternoon, she had an email copy of it in her home.
He composed it in maybe an hour or two. And it was just flawless.
Wow.
It showed up we had met that morning in the studio. I mean,
it really is like writing, sometimes writing music is like writing a letter.
You said, I wondered about that. You said often that music is like an underground river. You know it's there, you don't know exactly where, but you know, when things go right, you're tapping into it. But there's something more deliberate here, isn't there? I mean, here was Wendy.
No, it's not deliberate.
To
me, it wasn't deliberate. It was intuitive and spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
When you say deliberate, that makes it sound almost analytic, as if we're thinking about it. The thinking process of ordinary thought was almost entirely absent.
Let's listen to, before we get to that bold sort of romantic passage in Song 5, there's the beginning kind of declarative, I don't know, question seeking. Here's Song 1 from Songs and Poems for Solo Cello, composed by Philip Glass, performed here again by Wendy Sutter.
Thank you.
Songs and Poems for Solo Cello, Song 1 there. Philip Glass and Wendy Sutter are with us, but a lot of listeners who'd like to speak to you too. Let's take a call from Toronto, Canada. Athlee is on the line. Hi, Athlee. You're on the air with Philip Glass and Wendy Sutter.
I'm delighted to be able to talk to Philip Glass. What I wanted to say was, I shall never forget the day I heard Philip Glass's music. I was so excited. I had, as a youngster, followed music from ballet right through to Stravinsky and so on and so forth. But when I heard Philip Glass, I thought, oh my God, this is absolutely incredible.
Do you remember when it was, Athlee? What piece?
It was about 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a young person. It was in my office. I was a manager of public relations. In my office, and I just couldn't concentrate on anything until I got a record of his.
And what did it mean to you? What did it say to you?
Oh, it just means something really new and exciting. New and exciting, yeah, is the way I would put it, because it's so different and yet so mesmerizing. That is the word, mesmerizing.
Yeah,
his work is mesmerizing. And so I would say that America should be thankful for this wonderful, wonderful man.
And indeed we are. Thank you so much, Athlee, for that from Toronto. Wendy Sutter, what about you? Do you remember your first time hearing Philip Glass? So the first time you really focused on, who's that? What's that?
Yeah, I was 13 years old, and I went to see Koyaanisqatsi in the movie theater.
Yes,
and
yeah.
I was going to go see the movie with my girlfriends that had no actors. Remember that we were like, there's no actors, there's no script.
Right.
It's just images and film. And, you know, that was since, you know, I wasn't alive during the time of silent movies. This was pretty exciting, so, you know, following Star Wars and all that other stuff.
You were already, no doubt, practicing away on your cello.
Oh, yeah, no, I started when I was 5 years old, so I was actually playing concerts, you know, little recitals and things already at that time. So I didn't know anything about Philip Glass. I just knew this was a movie that didn't have a, you know, quote-unquote story. So, I was in a movie theater and was just completely blown away with being so enraptured and hypnotized by the film. And then, to tell you the truth, I didn't really know anything else about Philip after that. When I went to Curtis when I was 16, and we didn't study Philip Glass. We didn't study anything. We went up to about, God, I should be careful about what I say, but we studied, you know, we were allowed to play music. We played some Schoenberg and some Webern once in a while to kind of keep our metric chops up.
And that's as contemporary as it got.
Yeah, we didn't go past that. Music beyond that was not considered music. And so basically this through the second Viennese school. And actually, Curtis was, I can't say enough about Curtis. My training there was just phenomenal training, and the relationships I had with my string teachers and coaches was just, you know, just unbelievable. But Juilliard, I went to Juilliard to do my master's degree because I finished Curtis when I was so young, and I didn't really want to jump into the big scary world so soon. And Juilliard was, hipper in that way, and that I met composers and worked and was kind of actually forced to work with composers. Bobby Mann, the violinist, really encouraged me to take advantage of the composers on site, and he said, we're going to get a little bit rid of some of this debutante.
Enough of all that. But who knew?
Like, you think all the repertoire.
Right.
If
you'd hold the thought, Wendy, we've got to take a short break here, and I'm just thinking as we do, who knew that when you were in your 30s and Philip Glass in his 70s, he would write for you, you would perform for him. We'll come right back with much more of Philip Glass and Wendy Sutter after a short break here. Here's Song 6 from Songs and Poems for Solo Cello. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with composer Philip Glass and cellist Wendy Sutter about their new collaboration, Songs and Poems for Solo Cello. You can join the conversation if you dreamed of having someone compose for you, of playing the work of an admirer. And after all these years and pieces, what's your question for Philip Glass? What's your question for the muse, she with the cello? What do you make of the dance of these two musicians? Here's a little clip. Philip Glass and movie maker Godfrey Reggio collaborated on three films, Anima Mundi, Koyanis Katsi, and Nakoya Katsi. Here's the filmmaker, Godfrey Reggio, describing Glass's music.
He has created a musical language that is the acoustic door to the unknown, something possessed of an enormous complexity in this simplicity, like an ever-ascending score that never reached to the heavens.
Godfrey Reggio there, from the documentary Glass, A Portrait of Philip in 12 parts. Wendy, I'm sorry, I had to interrupt just before, and you were taking us up to the point, I mean, what you had... You had heard some of Philip Glass. You began to study maybe some from that period.
Long story short, I didn't really know much about him at all.
Right.
I mean, I knew his film, and I knew that he was a composer who wrote for movies. And there was actually an awful rumor out in the classical world that he didn't even know how to read music, that he wasn't – this is how badly he was –
The disdain some felt for him in those days.
He wasn't even – he was not in my textbooks. In fact, a colleague of mine challenged me on that, and I – found my textbooks from Juilliard and early, late 80s, and there was one stupid quote about Philip that if you were going to listen to Philip's music, you should be high and sitting in a cafe. I mean, this was in the right. I showed that to you. Remember, Philip?
Yeah.
This is how he was regarded. So when I joined Bang on a Can in 2000, one of the first records we did on our label that Cantaloupe was, we decided we wanted to go back and visit the classics, meaning record early Glass, Andreessen, Steve Reich, Terry Riley, etc. Yeah. And so this was the first time I was looking at the score, and this is, being very honest, I was in the taxi going downtown to the studio. I didn't even take the music out of the envelope because I thought, oh, it's Philip Glass, whatever, that's going to be just those notes.
Why
go
bother?
On and on and over. So I looked, I took the music out on my lap in the taxi. This is on the way to the recording now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, now how do you do this? I mean, it's just these little cells, and okay, the guys will show me how to do this, and my bandmates will show me how to do it. And they did, and so we did the recording that day. So that was my second, really after Koyanis Katsi, my second, this is in now the year 2000. Yeah. So then Philip joined us on a tour, or I think maybe that was a little later. He joined us on a tour in 2004, and so we were performing works with him, and... the act of performing his music is so transcendent that's what kind of, for me, was the most interesting part of it. You do kind of go into these weird stages and almost start hallucinating. I mean, you're physically exhausted. We were playing three of his pieces a night, music and fifths, similar motion.
With the repetition gradually moving.
And the physical exhaustion. And we would have all these... We would have these like safeguards, like, okay, if someone gets tired, cut out here, and I'll cover for you, and blah blah blah. You know, we just assumed that we could never actually get through all those pieces on the second half of an evening, night after night. But you do it, and it's like being an incredible athlete, and the experiences are so crazy exciting that I think that's what then got me turned on to his music more. And then there was about a year that lapsed, and after that tour, and Philip called me and said he had a project for me. And, I studied some with Rostropovich, who we all know had probably 50 works written for him by some of the greatest composers of the 20th century. And so when you have a composer who's in the planet, even though I didn't know much about him, really, and Philip said, I want to work with you and write something for you, you better believe I was going to take advantage of that and, and to enhance the cello repertoire, and we're living in the same city, and it would be convenient. So when we started initially doing a project together, I held him to it. I said, we are going to meet, and this is going to happen. And then it kind of took on its own life. And Philip started writing these beautiful things. So it turned into something else. But I'm still learning a lot about his repertoire. I mean, I'm much better now. I didn't know at that time that he'd written 22 22 or 23 operas. I didn't know he had had one opera. The word on the street was that he didn't even know how to read music.
Yeah.
And now because of the success of Songs and Poems, the classical players that I play with, their eyes are wide open and they're putting their bids in for the pieces. And, it's very interesting, this power of this one, the CD that it's made in, over the, in the classical.
I'm sure.
I think even for the opera, the Met and things, it's really open people's eyes and ears, and rightfully so.
Just interrupt that.
Yes, please.
One of the things that occurred to me when we saw what happened with Songs and Poems and the reaction that people who didn't know much about new music had to it, it occurred to me that I was actually crossing a frontier I had never crossed before, and the frontier was classical music audiences.
Mm-hmm, right.
I had never really written for them
before.
You were
coming to them for a change.
I'd never written, and they didn't know me, and I didn't know them. But here was a piece of music which no one needed to have explained to them.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious now, in your 70s, and with so much work behind you, listening to Wendy describe her path toward your music and you, and how, her teachers would belittle it, maybe at some point saying you're supposed to be high in a cafe to listen to this. What is it like to be approached by different generations? Because probably some of your first listeners were high in a cafe and saw nothing weird about
that. Look, Tom, they may still be for
they
all I know.
They may still be, but I mean, what is it like to different generations who come to your music now?
I began writing in this way in my late 20s and early 30s, there was a tremendous hostility to this, and not just to me, but to colleagues of mine, whether it was Reich or Riley or Louis Anderson or Gavin Bryars or Meredith Monk, for that matter. We were treated like idiot savants, as if we didn't have any idea what we were doing. Mm. And actually, I thought it was completely funny. Because in the same textbooks that were being read in Juilliard, you have to remember, I graduated from Juilliard.
Right.
I had a master's degree from Juilliard.
Right.
And I wasn't even invited I wasn't even invited to come up and have a cup of coffee there.
The outcast.
I was a total outcast for years, and I kind of liked it. I found myself and my colleagues and some very talented, gifted composers. Arthur Russell died much too young. John Gibson is still, all these people still alive and still working. Frederick Jeske. I could just mention dozens of talented people who were part of this world. And we created a new world of, we called it downtown music. Somebody else called it that. We didn't call it anything. And there were audiences. They weren't the people that went to the Metropolitan Opera or the New York Philharmonic, but they were, by the time I was 30, I had an ensemble. I was playing around the world, and people said, "When were you? Did you become successful?" I said, "I was successful when I was 30."
But there's something, of course, there's something funny, humorous about you looking at a new frontier now at 71,
and it turns out to be the people who wouldn't even contemplate the possibility that I could even read music. Right. But I find it delightful, actually. I find this piece has been a passport to a world that didn't know me. And I was talking to one person who said, I've never liked any of your music until this piece. I said, actually, it was a music critic. And he said, this is the first piece of yours I've liked. And I said, well, maybe you'll go back and listen to some other pieces and find that you like them too. And he said, well, I might just do that.
Maybe so. A door that swings both ways. Maybe swings back to those earlier compositions.
These kinds of things happen to people all the time. Van Gogh did not sell one painting in his lifetime. I don't mean to compare myself to a genius of that magnitude.
You sold a few.
But I want to talk about. But in terms of rejection, I can compete with him pretty well.
You've talked about, and it was in the documentary. You were talking about how the challenge at some point becomes finding the new, staying fresh, changing, finding the path to change. And here, I guess, in some sense, you found that in a person, in Wendy, in her cello, in her manner of playing, maybe even in her relative youth. I don't know. What about it?
That is an example par excellence of that. However, collaboration will routinely put you in front of something new, whether it's Fode Sousso from Africa or Mark Atkins from Australia or Paul Simon from New York City or whoever. Once I work with someone who I don't know and in a medium that I'm not familiar with, then things begin to happen. Sometimes personal things can happen as well. But I've been drawn to collaboration because I felt that that was the way that kept music alive for me.
Your sister said in the documentary that you've had four marriages. You said she said with your wives, your wives had to be half your age plus seven.
That's
I'm younger than that.
That's something that somebody.
It was your sister.
That's something that you can read in a comic book. I really don't think you need to put it on your radio program.
Your sister said it.
Pardon me. Does that make it more truthful?
Yeah, I know family. What are we going to do with family? Let's go to our listeners.
Well, I love my family. Actually,
yes, of course. And yet, we all know what family can be. Here's Patrick calling from Marshfield, Massachusetts. Patrick, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Philip and Wendy. I just wanted to call up and thank you, Philip, for being such a wonderful model for young composers, but the kind of, you know, Hindemith Britten writing directly for people and having that intimate connection, but also not having to, you know, live in an ivory tower, but writing music for everyone to hear, and being so supportive of younger composers and really giving us kind of a different path to follow.
You're a composer, Patrick. What do you get from the Philip Glass model inspiration?
Well, for one thing, I'm a composer performer as well. So that idea that you can do both, and you know they're very different ways of thinking. And I'm also very interested in writing for other people, but having a connection with your own music, but also having the connection with your audience and connection with your performers that you really actually don't find a lot until Philip and some of his contemporaries. It's just been a great model for people to follow.
Patrick, that's wonderful to have, and we thank you for it. There's so many. Let me get a couple more here before our clock runs out. Amy in New Milford, Connecticut. You're on the air with Philip Glass and Wendy Sutter.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm so excited to be part of this conversation. I, like Wendy, was introduced to Philip Glass's work with Cleona Scozzi.
The movie, yes.
And I think it was sophomore year of college, maybe something mm-hmm. around there, mm-hmm. zillions of years ago.
Yeah,
but,
me too.
I find myself, I'm a teacher, and I teach theology at a private high school, and I actually use Cleona Scozzi and actually the whole trilogy in my class. And I can't tell you what an experience it is for me to have my kids respond so viscerally to that movie and to that work on the same level that I did zillions of mm-hmm. years ago. And it's something that they talk about, they write about continually. It stays with them. It's an extraordinary experience, and that was my initiation to Philip Glass, and
that's wonderful. Talk about opening doors and still opening doors for your students. And thank you, Amy. Let me get one more from Augusta, Georgia. Benji, you're on the air.
Hi, everyone. I had the chance to dance to Mr. Glass's music with North Carolina Dance Theater under Jimmy Broad and Jean-Pierre Balfou, and I really enjoyed it. And I was wondering if Mr. Glass found dance, or did dance find him? Did he?
Well, I found.
Enjoy dancing.
I did, but as a young composer, my question for myself was always at Juilliard was, who is interested in new music, and how do I find people that would like it? And I found right away that dancers were always looking for music. Theater people were looking for music. Especially at Juilliard when I was at the time, that was in the days of Jose Limon and Martha Graham, and there were a lot of young dancers there, and they were all doing choreography to new music. So I found the dance world was the first world that embraced my music, and that relationship has lasted my whole life.
You said you've come onto a new frontier with this work with Wendy Sutter. Do you intend to stay on this frontier, or are you headed back onto the beach?
I have no idea. But we have ideas for new pieces, and there are other players I've been working with. And these are not people who I've normally played with my ensemble. Tim Fain is a violinist I work with. Maria Bachman is someone who I'm going to be writing music for, another violinist from Kurdistan. So I'm meeting, I am, through Wendy and through this piece, I am meeting performers who up till now haven't really played the music before. And that's extremely interesting.
And Wendy, it's on the CD now, and we're enjoying it. Are you performing songs and poems? Or do you have a performance schedule for it? Or?
Yes, it's being booked quite a bit now for the next the next two seasons. It's I'm performing it next week, I think, in Telluride Festival, and then we have a performance of it in Ireland the next month. There's a lot of bookings. People like this piece.
And with Philip over your shoulder, do you feel more freedom to, I don't know, change the way you perform it?
If he's nearby or...
I don't know. Did the fact that he's around and listening, does it make you want to do it differently?
No, I don't care what he thinks.
Okay, good for you.
I really don't. I mean, I think the composer for a performer is very obviously important. At the beginning, they give you the script, mm-hmm. you know. And... but Philip's not a director, you know. He's like the screenwriter, and he doesn't act like a director. Then I think for most, it's fair to say that most strong performers, once we have an ownership of that piece, you know, that it's kind of ours. And it's funny for me now to listen to the recording because I play it so differently now. It's a year ago, and you know, I wasn't performing the piece that much when I recorded it, so. It's interesting, even when you're playing little snippets, I'm like, oh, wait, that's too slow.
Maybe different next time. Maybe different at Telluride.
Yeah, absolutely. We want it to be different every time. That's our dream.
By the way, Tom, the score has almost no markings in it at all. There are no metronome markings. There's very little phrasing.
Wow.
And I think Wendy's exactly right. At a certain point, and very soon, the piece has to become her piece. And I'm very happy for that to happen.
Well,
I think I'm very fortunate to have that happen.
Yeah, we're all fortunate for it. We don't get to speak with a muse every day, Wendy Sutter, or Philip Glass. It's really a treat.
I'll have to put that on my resume.
Yeah, there you go. Songs and poems for solo cello. We'll go out with song 4. Philip Glass, Wendy Sutter, thank you very much to both of you for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom. Very pleased
to be here.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.